sunset.
Yeah, ooh, I knew we'd get it fixed. Out of the western sunset, a mysterious stranger arrives, looking kind of mean, and scratching his rump, and spitting in the bushes, and waiting for the bad guys to show up. Not bad. Not bad. That echoes throughout the jungle with a fantastic, blood-curdling, thrilling, frightening, horrifying, deep, primal sound. That sound is the sound which was created by the world's most known literary character. No, I'm not kidding. This is the truth. That of all the literary characters that have ever been created by the mind of man, let's face it, a literary character is something that man created, you know. He didn't exist. This is the most known, recognized, worldwide character. Many people know the name, but they have never read the stuff, you know. Now, who was I doing? Yeah, that's right, correct. Tarzan. Sometimes called Tarzan. But he was called Tarzan, which is much more elegant than Tarzan. Tarzan. And he was an ape man, which has been lost over the period of time that he has gone through various transformations. He's become somewhat of an elegant physical culture nut. But the original the original Tarzan was something else again. And I might point out that he was also quite possibly the original male chauvinist pig. To bring it into relevancy, because his lovemaking and his approach to the female gender was very direct. In fact, the only line that we know of where he speaks of love was, "You, Jane, me, Tarzan." Now, that's pretty basic. And after that, he went to work. Now, Tarzan didn't mess around when it came to things of that nature, since he was an ape man. Let's face it, he was an ape man. And if you'll please bring me up that thing I gave you there. Please just sneak it in there. We'll give you a little ape man music. And that's it. Bring it up big. Come on, don't sneak it in. I want this big. That's it. Deep in the African jungle, the creature who was half man, half ape, swung from vine to vine, moving towards, ever towards, his foe, his prey. It was Tarzan, the ape man. His physique was remarkable, since he had grown in the jungle, nurtured by apes. There was little of the effete human as we know him today in the clubs and the salons. His muscles rippled under his golden skin. It was Tarzan the ape man. Unable to speak in tones of culture, in fact knowing no language other than the language of the jungle itself, Tarzan the ape man conversed with his fellow animals, a series of grunts and squeaks. He felt the gnawing of hunger deep inside his vitals, and he was out tonight in search of prey. Tarzan the ape man struck. Dropping like some huge cat from high in the trees on an unsuspecting antelope, he struck like a bolt of lightning from the blue. His stone knife ripped at the vitals of the antelope, and with a quick wrench, he fractured its neck, and the animal sank to its knees, dead before it hit the ground. And Tarzan, the ape man, crouched next to his fallen prey, ready to begin his meat, his quivering red meat. What had once been an antelope was now merely a meal for Tarzan the Ape Man. And at the first taste of blood, he threw his head back and cried out to his fellow jungle creatures, the cry of the victorious carnivore, letting the rest of the animals know that he had slain and warning them away from his prey. Tarzan, the ape man, sat deep in the jungle, devouring the red, quivering meat, still warm from life of the antelope. Tarzan, the ape man, a mysterious throwback to man's ancient, primitive, darkened past. After his meal was complete and his stomach was filled with the red flesh of his fallen prey, Tarzan stretched and slowly climbed a tree. He lived in the treetops like his fellow apes to avoid the claws of the avenging leopard, the stalking lion. Tarzan, the ape man, settled into the bower, the twigs and the trees, and watched his fellow apes as they settled down for the night. Tarzan, the ape man, was at peace. Now, that's the original Tarzan. Did you know that the original Tarzan was a carnivore? And furthermore, he was a carnivore that slew or that slayed with feline grace. And that cry that he echoed, it's funny how things change, but that cry that he screamed out into the jungle was the cry of a carnivore who had struck and had slain its foe. Did you know that was the original meaning of it? That is correct. And it said, furthermore, there was one passage that went on to say that when that cry echoed throughout the jungle, creatures of lesser talent scurried in fear and hid, crouching in caves, because they knew that the greatest killer of them all was loose and had just slain one of their members, Tarzan the Ape Man. And it made him fantastically dangerous, because not only did he have all the skill of an ape in climbing he had the immense strength of an ape. Incidentally, he was raised by apes, and for that reason he had giant strength. But he had the innate cunning of man. So if you couple man with the power of a gorilla, you've got something to handle. And plus the fact that he was a born carnivore, which none of the other apes were. That made him something else. Now, did you know that this was the original Tarzan? Well, I want to tell you, very few people, yeah, somehow they keep thinking of it as Buster Crabb or Johnny Weissmuller. But the real Tarzan, the Tarzan of the literature, was something else. You know, speaking of Tarzan, if you want to carry it even further than that, I'll ask you a question of real trivia. Do any of you remember when Tarzan of the Apes was on radio? That is correct. As a matter of fact, Tarzan of the Apes was on radio, and at that time, a large number of comic strip characters were on the radio at the same time, among them Shandu the Magician, Mandrake the Magician. These guys were all on radio. Terry and the Pirates. Do you remember hearing Terry and the Pirates? Did you know that Smiling Jack was on the radio? All these were characters on the radio. At one time, I guess maybe it didn't happen so much out here in the East. But the reason I say it didn't happen so much in the East because many of the comic strips that were really popular at that time originated in a Chicago newspaper, the Chicago Tribune. And they had a radio station. They owned their own radio station. So it was natural for these guys, the Chicago Trib, to put a lot of comic strip characters on the radio. They owned the strip. In other words, they owned the comic strip character. Now, maybe a lot of them didn't get out here to the East. Did you know that at one time, one of the most popular radio shows among real little kids, you know, kids like 7 or 8 years old, something like that, was Skeezix. Did you ever hear that? Well, you know who Skeezix was, the Wallets and all that stuff. Well, Skeezix was on the radio, and everyone was listening to Skeezix all the time. And I never even thought about it as a comic strip character because I never, you know, I was too little. I didn't even read or anything. I never looked at comics, but I used to listen to Skeezix. And there was another one that was a big deal that was on at the time, Harold Teen. Did you ever hear of Harold Teen? All right, I'll ask you a question if you think you know anything about that type of trivia. Who was his girlfriend? What was the name of his girlfriend? Harold Teen. That was a, you know, that was a big part of the strip. He was always trying to take her to places and doing this, you know, the whole big thing. Who, well, you don't remember the name of the girl? Well, I'll give you another piece of trivia that girl, and this was on when I was a little kid. I remember this vaguely. I remember Harold Teen. The girl that played, the actress that played Harold Teen's girlfriend is still on television. Huh? I will not tell you what's her name. I mean, it's taken me a lifetime to accrue this fantastic knowledge. Okay. Well, this was always on. Well, the thing that got us was the Tarzan thing. That's what really swept all the, you know, really got the kids in the area going because Tarzan opened up. The radio show opened up like this. You'd hear boom, 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 or whatever that was, you know. And the announcer would say, "This is WGN Chicago." Or he would say, I don't recall it. There was one station in Chicago that had a great station break, and they called themselves the Theater of the Air. That's a great name, you know, the Theater of the Air. But they used to say things like WBBM, the Theater of the Air. Boop. And then you'd hear, "Ah!" Tarzan of the Apes. Oh, man. And you know, they really did it. Tarzan never talked on the show. Now, that's how authentic it was. They didn't have Tarzan saying, "And now today I will go out and I will train the elephants on how to do." Tarzan did not speak. They stuck with the actual Edgar Rice Burroughs. You'd hear Tarzan, and the narrator would tell you about it. The narrator would say, "The great ape man swung from high atop the tree." And, oh, wow, man. I'll tell you. Because we all had secret ambitions to be ape men. In fact, I guess everybody secretly digs pro football because it is populated by ape men of one kind or another. I mean, if pro football was played by 5'7", 120-pound weaklings, it could be an exciting game, just as exciting, you know. But who the hell would care? I mean, the minute you see this 6'9" tackle that weighs 307 pounds come charging down on this 290-pound tight end who is 6'6" tall, you know you got something going, right? And it's a fact. You'd rather see two elephants fight it out than a couple of cockroaches battle it out, wouldn't you? That's why the heavyweight ranks in boxing are always exciting. Hardly anybody can tell you who the middleweight champion is, and everybody can tell you who the heavyweight is, right? Muhammad Ali, to quote my friend Howard Cosell, he says that with such conviction you can just see his toupee rise and go up and down when he says Muhammad Ali. Somehow, that's part of the that's part of the religious rites of our time. But nevertheless, yes, oh yes, indeed, the sports has replaced religion to many people. Absolutely. And they pay obeisance to sports figures in much the same way they used to pay obeisance to religious figures. Religious figures, of course, are very important. And naturally, like all true religions, sports has become that. Like all true religions, the interpreters of the religion become important. Let's face it, the Pope is an interpreter. He's an interlocutor between the believers on one hand and heaven on the other. So he's extremely important. Howard Cosell is in a sense the Pope of the uninformed sports fan. And yes, it's very important. And this is a religious concept that cannot be ignored in our time. The deification of Chris Schenkel, the canonization of Kurt Gowdy. All these things are part of our time that cannot be ignored. They're much more important than the actual performers at this point because they embody two things. They embody not only a direct pipeline to the actual deities, but they also embody in themselves the church wherein the deities are worshipped, namely the media. So media is our church, and Chris Schenkel is our spokesman. He is our priest. So, this is not to be taken lightly, and these men all know this very well, and eventually the various writings of these people will be taken very seriously, you know, as from the original writ by Howard Cosell, and they will be quoted. And naturally, of course, the performers are not nearly as important as those they comment on. So, if you hear the Monday Night Football, you realize the real authority is Howard Cosell, not Frank Gifford, who played 16 years in the NFL, not Don Meredith, who played 200 years in Dallas. The final authority is always Howard. There's been a belief around for a long time that if, say, St. Peter were to come back on the scene, he would have a lot of trouble making his way through many schools of theology who would disprove everything he had to say about what actually had, you know, went on back in them days, to use a term that's very popular in the Bronx. Can you imagine St. Peter making a guest appearance at Fordham? It'd be a lot of arguments. I mean, he'd have a hell of a handful with some theologians I know. that's right. Now we have experts in every field. We have experts in the field of, say, for example, the Civil War. Bruce Caton, for example, who wrote nothing but Civil War stuff. So this is all part of religion. It always is this way. In fact, in the 17th century, in the 18th century, it became such that the church of the time became so convoluted and so highly developed that theologians would spend endless months arguing about such esoterica, and they actually did, about the number of angels that could dance on the head of a pin. And this was very important. Well, this would have confused thoroughly St. Peter, an argument of this type. So now you find great, vast arguments that are being argued on television which have nothing to do with the players, nor the game, nor even the spectators. So right now, the current argument, there's a new phenomenon called the no-show. We argue endlessly about no-shows. It seems you know what the no-show is. You do. We're all aware of what the no-show is. And these are the esoteric things which always arise when a religion is in decline. I hate to say it, fellas, it's in a decline. Yes, television sports is now in a decline. With the rise of Howard Cosell's, you can definitely tell that, and with the rise of the Bobby Riggs match, that television sports is in a period of gorgeous decadence. That's called gorgeous. That was like the Byzantine period, when the end of the Roman Empire and the Greek influence was beginning to decline. The Slavs were starting to design the buildings. That was known as the Byzantine period. That was just before Attila the Hun went rampaging all over the place and, you know, picking up a chick here and there and taking her back to the cave and slugging guys with axes and stuff. That was the beginning of a whole new era. It took the Renaissance to get us back on the track. You know, this is a theory that I'm going to pursue because I think sports is a big deal in our time. It was. Very interesting things happening. Like all true religions, when the excesses begin to set in, at that point, you begin to lose, one, the point of the religion in the first place, and two, the parishioners begin to drift away. Now, there are many theologians who will tell you that the decline of, the church is a viable thing, a living thing in everybody's lives, began about the time that the big evangelists began to make it a gigantic show. This was just after the big show of the Inquisition turned off a lot of people. And the churches got gigantic, enormous, fantastic lights playing all over them. At that point, it began to change into something else again. I think that there's less interest now, this moment, in professional football than anyone cares to admit, primarily because it went into excess, that it was hardly possible. Well, at least after the Super Bowl, there's at least 35 bowl games that follow the Super Bowl. The Pro Bowl, the Coaches Bowl, the Losers Bowl, the Second Team All-Stars Bowl, the Coaches Pick Bowl, Joe Namath's Favorite Team Bowl, the Let's Make Money Bowl, the Schlock Bowl, the Promoters Bowl, the TV Bowl, the Chris Schenkel Memorial Bowl, and it goes on and on and on. So at the point when before the season, we have you noticed now today that almost all guys that are commenting on the pro football games that are being played now, they sound cheated because we've already had a whole season of preseason games. And they can't figure out why the Giants aren't playing like they did in the preseason. In other words, this season is a drag. The other one was groovy. And I say that this is what happens in a period of decline. You always find an apparent prosperity. Baseball began to decline when they began to put teams in every major city in the country and some minor ones. When they began to have major league teams and they had to divide it up into various divisions within the divisions, so this is what is known, this is the period of decline that always sets in any sports. In fact, this is what happened in wrestling. That wrestling, it may surprise a lot of you to know that at one time wrestling was a serious sport, and there were serious champions, national champions. I'll give you a clue. Who is the most famous of them all? I'll give you a bit of trivia. Strangler Lewis. He was the Joe Lewis of big-time wrestling. There was another guy that was a famous one, Jim Landos, who was known as the Golden Greek. But when wrestling began to go into decline, it seemed to have a period I suppose you could say popularity. Incidentally, television has destroyed almost every sport ultimately that it got involved in. Television destroyed wrestling. That brought on the Gorgeous Georges and the team tag, and so ultimately it declined into nothing. And other sports are going that way. And I suspect that since sport is a religion of one kind or another. It's hard to define what it is. It is. And and it always did have religious significance. It did with the Greeks in the days of the original Olympics. So don't put it down. Don't simply say, come on, this is just Shepherd blowing smoke. It is not. That sport plays a very deep and visceral part in our lives. Now, it may play a greater or lesser part in everybody's life, but this has always been true of religions. At the very peak of religion, I'm talking about classical religions, there were always the guys sitting around down at the local gin mill, swilling the grog and laughing at the guys that were heading towards the local church. It was just always a fact. This is true of sports. So you find the true believer is a true believer. He dedicates himself. You notice that they use religious terms in connection with sports. The word miracle reappears constantly. This is a religious concept. Miracle. A a God-created unearthly event. Look up the word miracle. A miraculous event is an event which occurs outside of human agency. It's a miracle. Walking on water. This is a miracle. It's miraculous. And so we constantly use these terms, I suppose, inadvertently, and perhaps even with subconscious knowledge that they apply. Curiously enough, religion, like all true religions, the sport religion, also involves evil. No religion can make it unless it has evil involved. Have you noticed that almost all the books that make it about sports are not books on sports, but how evil sport is? Jim Boughton made it, writing about, you don't really know what Mickey Mantle is like, really. And in short, the implication of evil is always involved. And if you wrote a book about how great Mickey Mantle was, you'd sell 12 copies. If you wrote a book on how great... Have you noticed that the people who really make it big in sports, I mean, in the popular vein, are also people who have been involved often in curiously shady events? Joe Namath has had his scrapes with the officialdom. And I don't mean necessarily just referees. He's had his scrapes with the law moves in once in a while, you know, on Bachelor's 3 and all this stuff. Sure, it goes back. Now, I say that this lies the difference between Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth in the kind of men they were. Hank Aaron is a very straight guy. I mean, he obviously has a family. He doesn't do all anything. He just go out and hits home runs. Well, that's not enough to make you an immortal. You must also have that touch of evil about you. And so Babe Ruth was notorious for arriving at the ballpark direct from a sleazy nightclub where he had spent the last 3 days. Hank Aaron in no way would ever be caught doing this kind of stuff. And so it is that curious touch of good and evil in one man that makes a guy become a big, big deal. Well, it's all the religious connotations of sports are numerous and varied. The trappings of it are getting that way. Have you noticed the uniforms are getting more rococo? That you see the Oakland A's come in, they look like a girls' softball team from Waukesha, Wisconsin. White shoes, pink shoes with tassels and all. This, incidentally, is also part of the Byzantine period of decline. This is what's happening to football suits now. Oh, wow. I mean, football uniforms today rival anything that would have been popular during King Arthur's day. And so we've entered the Byzantine period, or the decline period of sports, where the churches take over, the church being media in this case. Sports is performed almost exclusively for the media now, just as when the churches began to take over from the actual participants in religion, it began to be about the churches. And so so now, have you noticed, curiously enough now, the big TV shows are Howard Cosell pretending to be a quarterback, which says a great deal. It's like, again, this is a religious concept. Nobody's interested in real quarterbacks. There's been an old canard going around many, many years in religious circles that if an actual saint ever reappeared, he wouldn't make it big at any of the local churches. You're much more interested in seeing a major cardinal who really interprets the work of the saint. Much more, if the Pope came, that would be much more important. Billy Graham arrives. That's much bigger, friends, than if, Daniel, who fought the lions, would show up. Little skinny guy with scratches all over him, bad sandals. He wouldn't make it. And so, believe me, Don Meredith is in no way as important as Howard Cosell, because Howard Cosell, Chris Schenkel, Kurt Gowdy, the media has become the church. The sports figures who play out the game are merely like the characters out of the Bible, and they are receding into the distance as the church takes over. Ultimately, we will have books called How Many Angels Can Dance in the Backfield of the New York Giants, as if it cared. And so we go down to the west, flags flying.